गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नोऽथिभिः सीदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ So sit yourself comfortably. Body can be still and relaxed. And I can take a few deep breaths. Gathering my attention. So as we were exploring last time, the Upanishad was saying that you can't see the consciousness, but the consciousness is behind the seeing. Due to the consciousness, one can see. And I can't see myself. I, the awareful being. But because I'm an awareful being, I can see. The seeing doesn't happen on its own, it needs the conscious being behind it. So at first, we withdraw from seeing things. I'm aware of seeing. Usually I'm looking out at objects, but instead, some of the time, watch the seeing. No, there's something interesting there. Then I'm seeing, I'm not observing the seeing. You just observe the fact that you can see. This step, then, you withdraw from being pulled out through the seeing to see that you're really observing the seeing. You're aware. What is awareness? I'm aware of something. Here I'm aware of seeing. In our mind's eye, then, I'm seeing something and I'm observing the seeing, you could say. This is the first step. Once I know I'm just observing the seeing, I'm aware of seeing. Then also is pointed out, tadeva brahma, that is not something limited. The observer is not something limited. So now the seeing itself that I'm observing, where within the seeing is the awareness? Is there any place within the awareness that the seeing isn't there? Sorry, the awareness isn't there. So as I watch something, my awareness is in and through the whole range of sight. It's awareness. The mind will get in the way and start labeling things, separating things. That's the thought process. But if I don't listen to that thought process, I just see, it's all awareness. Not limited to any part or aspect of the seeing, it's all awareness. That's the awareness reflected through the seeing. But when I drop the seeing, I'm still that awareness. Not conditioned by the seeing, not limited by something. So we say that the awareness is imminent through the whole process of seeing or any other experience like hearing, touching. And it's also transcendent. It's not limited to that range, the range of sight or hearing. Imminent yet transcendent. So when reflected through the seeing, reflected through the hearing, it has some limited purview. It's in it through the whole process, but it's limited to that purview. But in of itself, when I drop that sense, where's the limitation in the awareness?
Apyayantu mamangani vak pranaschakshushrotramatho balamindriyani cha sarvani sarvam brahma upanishadam maham brahma nirakuryam mama brahma nirakarot anirakaranamastva nirakaranam mestu Tadatmani nirate ya upanishatsu dharmas te mai santu te mai santu om shanti shanti shanti.
Very good. So we already know about the eyes, so let's see what else is being discussed here. We go to the next mantra, number 8. Points out the next sense here.
Tachrotrena nashrnoti yena shrotramidam shrutam tadeva brahmatvam vidhi. Nedam yatidam upasate. Yachrotrena nashrinoti yena shrotramidam shrutam tadeva brahmatvam vidhi nedam yadidam upasate.
So Brahman is that very consciousness which one does not perceive with the ear, but by which this ear is perceived, the hearing is perceived. This you understand. This deity which you worship here, meditate here, is not that Brahman. Same thing repeats. This, whatever here I meditate on, whatever here I worship, that is not the absolute, the Brahman. How can it be like this? So it's discussing the same thing with the different senses. And an important thing here is that we read this, we hear it, but then it's something for me to look into, because the Upanishad is pointing out where I can search. This is an important thing, that when you go to religion, the religion will say, yes, you want the God, this is the God, here's the God, right? And if you do this, then you'll favor the God, then you'll be able to find the God here, this way, right here. Now what happens is, it has its place, but we say it's preparatory, because that would be upasana, or karma, karma, the worship, external, upasana, the meditation, the mental attitude, which is helpful because, okay, where will I find the God? Have some focus, and then that focus will represent something else, but at first you focus in that. But then when you go further, then that focus, it becomes, at some point it also become an obstacle. This actually in the commentary on the Mandukya, we call Mandukya Karika by Gaudapada Acharya. This is Adi Guru Shankara's Guru's Guru, his text on this. And in there, he does say that, you know, when you're climbing up a ladder, you're climbing up the ladder, you reach a certain place, you hold on to the rung, it pulls you up. Now, once it pulled you up, you have to let go of that to go further. Otherwise, it'll become an obstacle to go further, like this. So I have the deity I worship, very nice, I like the form, but now I get stuck with that and I don't go further. So it has its place, but here it's not talking about that. Here it's talking about what is the essence, not what is the preparation. Preparation can do, there's no problem with it, but understand it as the preparation. Yes, at first you worship, that is the God, that deity is the God, yes, you do that. But then afterwards you have to see beyond that. So in any case, so here it's saying, okay, you want to find this. You want to find what you're looking for, stop looking outside. How will I not look outside? Well, my whole world is, as we said last time, is Shabda Sparsha Rupa Rasa Gandha. It's the sounds, it's the touch, it's the sight, it's the taste, and it's the smell. That's my world. And the thing is, I'm pulled out through the senses all the time. We call that Bahirmukhatvam, extroverted. We're extroverted. That's extrovertedness. So what happens is I see something. Now, when you see something, it's not just that I see. I'm looking at the screen, I see it. But I see, and then I say, oh, this person, yes, yes, they've been coming to class a long time. They're a very good student. How wonderful. This one, I don't know. You know, I don't know why they're here, blah, blah. I don't think like this. I'm just have to give some example from my mind like this. Everybody comes, welcome. I'm very happy people are here. Whatever you can come for, it's great. I'm happy people are interested in this. I'm interested in this. But somebody will see like this. You don't just see, you see with so many ideas. So we say there's a world, but let there be a world and not a world. Leave that aside. But first, I have my subjective world. My world is mostly my subjectivity, like this. So I'm not seeing. So the thing is, in order for me to see who's behind this, I want to see who's behind, who's inside. But when I open my eyes, I keep going out and seeing the thing. This I like, this I don't like. This is good, this isn't good. This I want, this I don't want. Then how am I going to do that? So that's why I have to just observe the seeing. You try some of the time, observe the seeing. Now it's the hearing, I observe the hearing. You observe and then you see you're the one behind it. Seeing is just seeing. There's just seeing, there's just some sensation, some light there, some form, and that's it. The moment I start, this is a wonderful point Swamiji here, Swami Tatviranandji brought up in one of the classes. He said the moment you name something, you label it, then you're giving it more of a reality. Then it's something real in your, within your world, and then it'll be very hard for you to let go of it, like this. Right? You move, you know, you go somewhere, there's something new to you. You taste it, or you hear it, or you see. Good, it's gone. But then you label it. You name it. It's X, something. Right? Then now it has some space. Then you can start, then slowly, the more you start thinking of it, the more it has a reality, and how are you going to dismiss it afterwards? No, I've been doing this for many years. What do you mean? This is a very important thing. Like that. Our whole world, then we build up like this. So, very important to learn and step back and watch. It says, how can I be the Brahman? How can I not be limited? Poor me. I'm caught up by all these things. Look, I have this problem with my body. Look, my mind is disturbed by this. I have this problem. And, you know, and I can't see clearly, so I have to now wear my glasses or my hearing aid or whatever it is. So, how, in order to pull back, see, so the person say, how can I be limited? Say, well, first you have to pull back from these things you're holding on to, identifying with. So to say, okay, just withdraw from everything. Just withdraw from everything and just be there. It's not easy, right? So it's saying, okay, each mantra is saying the eyes. What, just what, take some time, watch the seeing. Observe the seeing, I'm observing seeing. Learn more. The eyes are one of the biggest ones, because without, imagine without seeing, our world would be, so much of our world would be gone. You know, a blind person will have their whole world anyway, but still, just imagine without the seeing what our world would be. So it's not that I don't have to see, but take time regularly to reflect and say, okay, I see, I'm just watching the seeing, I'm Sakshi, right? I'm Drik, I'm not the Drishyam, the seeing, I said is Drishyam, I'm aware of the sight, I'm aware of it. Watch it. Out of habit, I get pulled up, but then I watch it. Now hearing, I hear beautiful music. No, no, I'm just watching the hearing, right? Noise that I disturbing, no, I'm just watching the hearing. Then you learn how to withdraw from it. Then I can observe it. So if you take one, just one sense, take some time, reflect on it. Later, after some time, maybe the week after, another sense. Of course, the seeing, hearing, and then touching, because touch is the body identification. Without sense of touch, you wouldn't identify with the body. So those three are the main ones. Taste and smell are also there, but they're more minor for us. It's true, I'm attached to certain flavors, etc., so it can be useful, but they're not as major. They don't make as world as, you know, as major players making my world. So you learn this, and then you can withdraw, then this becomes more practical for reflecting on. So that's a very important thing. So now one other thing when we're looking at the senses also is that each sense also, as they say, there's a presiding devata, devata, deity, like this. So it's not that... Again, it's not, okay, there's some supernatural power there. Because that supernatural power, now I can see. Like Surya Devata, maybe we'll be seeing, okay, there's some group deity there. So it's not like this. Because the thing is, it's in and through. So what happens is, the fact that I can see, it's a universal phenomena, right? And a universal phenomena that's there under certain conditions. Like gravity is a universal phenomena. So there must be a gravity devata, I don't know which that is, right? There's heat, fire, right? Or energy then, agni devata. So it's a universal phenomenon. It means it's manifest everywhere. At certain conditions, it'll manifest like this. So this is one thing about it that shows that all the different things within me, the seeing, hearing, thinking, all these aren't things just individual within me, but it's a universal phenomenon. So that's why it's manifestation of something universal, like this. Vijay Kapoorji, our teacher in California, he used to give a nice example. He said, for instance, a woman becomes a mother, right? Does somebody have to tell the mother, love the baby, love your child? Universal phenomena, not just of humans, but all creatures, when they have the child, the mother has the child, natural to loving comes. It's a universal phenomena, right? It manifests in that person or in the animal that has the offspring. So it's a universal phenomena. So it's not special just for the specific mother, but it's a universal thing, manifests there. Just like the seeing, the hearing, everything like this, okay? So just going back, when we talk about the observing the mind as well, just like we observe, we have to observe, learn to observe the mind as well. Dhritarashtra Viveka was talking about that. You learn to observe your mind because you have to step back from it, because I'm limited in all my ideas and thoughts. You know, let's say that I have, 100 thoughts in the minute that I'm caught up in. If I can unravel and disidentify with 10% of those, already I will have freed myself so much, right? So the more I can learn to be the sakshi, the observer, the more I disidentify. Sakshi, I'm the conscious, the awareful being, not the idea that happens to be bubbling in the mind. So that just from the previous things here. So this is with the devata. So one thing about seeing that it's a universal phenomena is then that it's less identification on this limited one. Because it's kind of like, I'm sitting here and the light is on here. I put two switches, two lights are on in the room here. Now, if this light were to fuse, still the light would be in the other light there because it's the electric is going through it. It's just it's a phenomena that the light is shining, that's it. It's not an individual thing, it's a phenomena, electricity doing that. So same thing, this body, a certain body is built like this, their eyes, and then because of the universal phenomena they see. It's a universal thing, right? Why is that? Why? And I identify I am seeing, but there is seeing, right? You'll say, yeah, but I can control it. Well, the thing is, this tape recorder is recording, right? I can control it. Does that mean I'm the tape recorder? No. Just because you have some control of something doesn't mean that that is you. Actually, the other way around, it won't be you. But in any case, the seeing, you didn't make it come, you won't make it go. It's a phenomena that happens just like anything else. So this is one thing. When you see it like this, some universal thing that helps to, get a more universal view and also less identifying with it. Now, one other point about the devata is very important. When you say devata or deity, it's not something jadam, not something that is insentient. So where do we know there is sentiency? In Vedanta, we're not pointing somewhere else for sentiency. Oh, there's a God somewhere and that God is sentient and now created. The only place I know sentiency, the only place I know there's consciousness is within myself. So that's where I have to be looking, right? The consciousness I know is within me. That I am conscious. So what happens is, let's say we're talking about seeing, right? Forms. So, is there any form you can ever see without the consciousness being there? We're talking about your awareness being in it through all your seeing. So I see a chair. Do I see just an insentient thing? Or is it a sentient, is it within the awareness, meaning there's a conscious element to it. Without my consciousness, that chair would not have been seen now. Meaning, consciousness, I the consciousness, plus the chair. It's the consciousness as the chair if you want. Just like there's the light on the chair, so the light takes the form of the chair. That's how I can see it. But the consciousness has to be there for it to be perceived. So anything you experience, the consciousness is in there too, anything I'm seeing, right? If you say Surya Devata, again, there might be other one for the eyes, I'm just from my memory putting, then that puts light on something. So your conscience putting light on that thing. So that your conscience putting the light on, without you, there wouldn't be light. Without you, the conscious being, through the eyes, where would the light be? So you don't know of a form, because what is sight, color, and form? You don't know colors and forms without consciousness. Show me. You know, one time, can you have a color and form without it? You'll say, yeah, it's out. There must be. There is a big boulder outside. It's sitting there, so there's no consciousness there. But the fact that you're, how do you know it's there? You're aware. So the consciousness, without the consciousness, would it be perceivable? No. The moment it's perceived, it's with the consciousness. So there's the devata is there. So that's why we say nothing is insentient, because your whole world, you experiencing through the senses, everything you experience has the conscious element to it. You're giving it the consciousness. Without you, it wouldn't be experienceable. Right here, I'm sitting in this is an old dining hall, and the temple is right here. And the temple here, they have Lord Dakshinamurti. Those who have been coming classes for a while, we did the Dakshinamurti Stotram. And so there, it's not a common deity, because people like deities that give them some, you know, physical ideas that it's going to get something, but this is totally Vedantic, a symbol of Shiva. So, but in any case, there, it talks about, yes, it has, there are many aspects to it, but one aspect of the deity, it has like the five elements, and sun and moon, which maybe it's time, and then also you, the one who's observing it. Without you, there's no deity there. So it needs the conscious being as part of the upasana on it, as the conscious being, that's part of it. Otherwise, it was in Dakshinamurti Stotram. Bhuram Syanalo Nilombaram Maharnato Himam Shuv Puman. Talks about upasana. That specific verse towards the end was about upasana. It says the five elements. There are different symbols of the five elements within the deity. Sun and moon and Puman, and you, the conscious being. Then you have, that's your world. The elements, time, and you, the conscious being. Without the conscious being, it's not there. So hearing, for example, here talking about hearing, digdevata, the directions, because the element that Vedanta puts as corresponding to hearing is the space. So for you, akasha, space, you don't have an insentient akasha, because you're hearing, you know direction. I'm hearing, I know the sound is coming different directions. I know the directions, meaning I know it. So the space is there because I'm aware of the space, right? Like this. So this is an important thing with the devata, not just to think, okay, there's some deity there, right? There's some special occasion. So in the heavens, Indra, the king of the gods, invited an Agni and Vayu and whoever, whatever other deities are there, they went and they got together. And the Asuras went and disturbed them and all this week, and I will also have stories like this. There will be a story at the end with some of these friends, the end of the Upanishad. But what happens is we think like this, but then again, needam yadidam upasate, but that's not what's talked about here, and that's not something you worship out there. Talking about the conscious being is you, the dead, so you are giving the consciousness to all the experiences. So this is an important thing here, is it's universal, but also the consciousness, all your experiences. There's nothing which is insentient, because your sentiency gives rise to the experience. Your experiential world, it's an experiential world that you have, right? So like this, you hear, then I'm touching, right? Thwag, what is the day? I don't recall, but you know, Tattva Bodha gives them, but whatever the touch deity there, yes, you feel something, that the consciousness is there. So it's a conscious experience. So that deity is there, part of it. You speak. They are Agni. Agni is speech, right? Fiery speech like this. So you're speaking. You have the urge to speech. You have to be a conscious being, right? And then the speech, the words, they come to light. Has to have the conscious being in it. There, of course, how will I speak if I'm not conscious? But so in this way, very important to remember like this, that then an insentient object isn't really insentient in that way, because it can never be there without you, the conscious being, verifying it, right? Because otherwise, you know, you'll say there's some object somewhere nobody has seen or heard or thought over this. Well, how do you know it's there? The moment you say, that means it's in our mind, so you're giving it the consciousness is with it, like this. So this is what this devata is. The consciousness, which is the devata, is you, like this. Okay, this is what this is pointing out as well. Okay, so otherwise it's the same thing. These mantras are talking the same thing for the different senses, as we saw, and we have to take and learn how to, see this. See that I'm the one, as we said, behind it, and then see that. You know, it's happening, it's universal's thing. See that in and through it, I'm there as awareness. Without the awareness is permeating in and through, so that's the devata, in and through it, okay? And then that's my whole world. Oh, whole world is that. So in any case, let's look at the next one.
Yat pranena na praniti. Yena prana praniyate tadeva brahmatvam vidhi nedam yadidam upasate yat pranena na praniti yena prana praniyate tadeva brahmatvam vidhi Nedam yadidam upasate.
Brahman is that very consciousness which one does not perceive by the nose, but by which consciousness, the nose, the smelling, is directed to its objects. Thus understand, this deity which people meditate upon is not Brahman. Translation a little hard like this. That which you experience here, what you meditate on here, worship here, is not the Brahman. So here, prana is talked about as sense of smell, like this. You want to add the taste afterwards, this, you can add it. We had hearing, we didn't have touch, add touch. The same thing is being discussed like this. So, and also reminding here that it was said at the beginning, if you remember, keneshitam pratati preshitam manaha, right? And then also it says about the prana. What is it that is? Impelling, as though impelling the senses to fall on the objects. So as though impelling, like this. Because what happens is, an example that's given about this, it's not that somebody is sitting there, okay, the Atma within me, it's making me hear like this. It's making me do it. It's pushing me like this. Because of it, I'm hearing like this, right? Because of it, I speak like this. Don't blame me, it's the Atma making me do it like this. So what happens is, an example is given that when you get in your car and you drive, right? You put the fuel in the tank, then you go. So now, the person is driving and they're going to be driving 100 miles an hour, 110 miles an hour, and the police will stop them. They'll say it's the fuel's fault. Because the fuel impels it to drive. Right? So you can drive recklessly, you can drive carefully, whichever way. The fuel didn't make how you're doing it, right? It doesn't have to do with the fuel. So here also, yes, the consciousness is impelling. Without the consciousness, one would not think, one would not see, one would not hear, one would not smell, as said here. But it's not that the conscience is making somebody act or do things in a certain way. That's the conditioning, the mental conditioning like this, right? That's how, you know, how good how sharp the sense happens to be. All these things can be like that. So in this way, yes, without the consciousness impelling, without the gas of the car, it's not going to drive. It won't work. So same thing. Without the consciousness behind the senses, behind the mind, they won't function. It's not possible. But it's not, and so it's needed for it, but it isn't, but the specifics, that's within the conditioning. That doesn't have to do with the consciousness itself like this. So that's an important point here, that not to confuse in that way. So it's not, as we said earlier on, it's not that consciousness sitting somewhere there and making and pushing it like this. So it was worded in a very interesting way to make sure that we don't think of it as sitting in some place. And also to show that it's not sitting someplace, the examples we gave, where you're in and through the whole experience, you're not limited to one part in it, right? Has to be somewhere. I'm behind the eyes and making me see out, but I'm in and through the whole eyesight. Where am I not through it? So it's not that it's limited in some place like this. Because we said the problem then, I'm going to look for it like I look for an object, right? Where is it inside me? Oh, they say it's in the heart. I must be able to find it right there. Yeah, you can focus in the heart, start there, but you're not going to find something sitting there and doing it, because not an object in a location like this. You're not going to find it like this. Okay, so this is an important point about this. Okay. And then, what this here specifically, the commentator just says about smelling, and it doesn't go into more because we've already had, it's already gone through so many details, different senses, etc. But still, let's go back to prana. I know we were going to discuss more. Satish, who had asked, he's not here, but he'll record and we can discuss more if he has more questions about it. But he had the question way back from the first mantra, second mantra, about how come it's not prana? Why is it not prana that we're talking about that does all this? Say, okay, what is it that's behind the eyes behind this? Why prana as well? Why don't say it's prana like that? So with this, it's a very interesting thing. It's a very good question. Now what happens is, when you just look at the creation of course is matter and there's energy. We'll say yes, the energy is there before the matter because everything is made out of energy. Right? Without energy, where would everything be? Not just my functioning, but everything in the world functioning. So it's true, everything comes from energy, everything made of energy, very good, prana. So you'll say prana, that's the bottom line, that's where everything comes from. But then there's one interesting thing. Like, if you look at what the scientists will say about the Big Bang, they'll say usually when there's an explosion, it's just chaotic, right? Any explosion that you do, it's chaotic. But the Big Bang isn't chaotic, very orderly. Whole universe is very orderly, right? The tree grows in a very orderly manner. And all phenomena, weather happens very orderly manner. Gravity, everything in a very orderly manner. So it's not random, meaning there's some intelligence there, right? It's an without intelligence, things won't be orderly. They'll be random like this, okay? So meaning, how can the energy be orderly? Meaning the intelligence has to be there for it to be orderly like that. So that's how I'll say, well, that's rajas, but sattva is the intelligence has to be there more towards the source than the prana. Otherwise, why would it be so orderly here? So this is one thing about this. So the prana, we say no. That can't be because something more subtle than the prana, and the prana wouldn't function as it is without the intelligence being behind it in this way. So this is one point about that. This is a general thing, and also me, I know I'm first a knowing being, intelligent being, then acting, because prana has to do with the karmendriyani, organs of action, hands, feet, speaking, etc., like this. So it's more, we put it, connect it more to those. Okay, so that's one thing that we say, that the intelligence is more subtle, that'll have to come first. The whole universe, you need the blueprint, right? The creator wakes up and says, okay, time to go to work, I have to create the universe again, right? And then we'll have to have a blueprint, has to have the idea how it is, and then it comes in, of course. That's what happens, is somebody tells a story like this, and then it's written down, and then the religion takes it verbatim, that there's the creator sitting somewhere and did like this. Here, just the point that, yes, there has to be the intelligent blueprint, the thought idea for it, for then to go and do it. You know, any man-made thing, first there was the thought, the intelligence, then the energy, go and make it. Without that, it wouldn't be. So there has to be the intelligence and then the energy, use the energy to go and do it. Okay, so this is an important thing. Now, one other thing is, you'll say that, yes, the prana, I'm mostly a living being. So you say, yes, you're a living being, right? I'm a living being like this. But living being, you say, how do you know? I feel that I'm alive. I feel that I'm alive, right? I feel it. I have a lot of energy. Yesterday I was sick, I had less energy. I felt that I was drained, right? So life force is as though less life force going away. I feel it. So you have to first be there, the intelligent being, to feel it. You know it. So you have to be there before the prana, before that. If that was the base thing, then how would you say, I feel that? You're the one who's feeling you're alive like this, okay? And then also then the creation, when something is created, it goes from the subtle to the gross. That goes together what we said, that the intelligence is subtler than energy, than movement like this. So this is, you know, this is why we'll have to be there beforehand, okay? Like this. So these are some points of how the prana is not going to be. We won't say it's the prana that made everything. It's true, you'll say, no, but without energy, the mind won't function. Yeah, apparatus won't function, but you're there. You're the conscious being, not just the mind. That's part of the mechanism to work, right? But you have the intelligence. The intelligence is within you, the consciousness. So you're going to be something subtler than that. Then you'll say, well, when I'm asleep, the prana is still functioning. Yes, the prana is still functioning, but from your perspective, there's no upadhi. Where's your upadhi then? From your perspective, there's just nothingness. I'm aware of nothing, right? From your perspective, there's no body or mind in deep sleep. Where are they? Somebody else's perspective, they're there. But your perspective, it's not. You don't have it then. So from your perspective, there isn't. There isn't anything there. You're there without body, without mind then, okay? Out-of-body experience, deep sleep, right? Like this. So this is a few points about the prana, like this. The prana can't be, and also you have energy, then you have energy that is, you'll say, whether living being, so it's a special energy. The difference is there between the light here, and between them there's a plant and there's an animal, is that they don't have the light here doesn't have a sukshma sharira, doesn't have a subtle body for the consciousness to reflect in. Because the whole, map the energy in the system, I'm assuming that everything can be mapped into electric and chemical and other types of energy, can just be mapped to that. So what makes it special that it's life force? The consciousness is reflecting there in this way. That's what makes it different. Because all the components, you know, you can take all the chemical components, you can take all the energy components, and you can see, yes, but it's not going to make the living thing. The living being needs the subtle body for the consciousness to reflect in it, like this. So in this way. Very interesting fact about this, actually. Somebody that I heard not too long back, that I didn't hear about this before. There was an interesting point about plant life. The plant life, the way their nervous system is built, that they don't feel like the animal does. That's why they don't feel the pain like an animal does. That's why, because somebody would say, well, you take the animal and slaughter and eat it, or you cut the plant, the poor plant. They don't feel it the same. Of course, you know, plant will be disturbed in some way, but it doesn't cause the same pain, harm, that it does with a living animal. So like this, interesting. So in this way, so there's just a few things about the prana in this way, okay? So then also is, when we said Tadeva Brahmatvam Vidhi, as it said here a few times, Tadeva Brahmatvam, you are that Brahma, not what is worshipped here, then also what happens is when I look at myself, then I see myself usually through some upadhi, right? I'm talking, so now I'm speaking, so I see myself, I'm speaker, so I'm identifier talking, so through the upadhi of somebody talking. And then you listen through the upadhi of listener, right? All these upadhis that it expresses through, right? So you whatever I'm thinking, expressing through the mind. So all this, I see it expressing through that. Then I identify with this whole thing of the upadhi. In general, of course, my three bodies, all this, okay, there's the upadhi, but all these different things also upadhis that expressing through. So that's the upadhi. Then you'll say, well, I know the Brahman, you're talking, you're the Brahman, but that's a universal thing. So you say, okay, then the consciousness reflected through the universal. The difference there is just the medium of expression, right? That here we'll have the, we'll put a small, here there's a bigger light, put a small light. You plug in one of those night lights, very small LED that has just a little bit of light, right? Like this. And then you go somewhere where there's a stage, sometime a huge performance stage, imagine, or in a stadium, the light's there. How much light they're going to have, or the whole light of the sun if you want, right? So take the stadium, huge amount of light, but it's still light just through a different upadhi. It's light, it's just what it's expressing through. But light is light. Here, or electricity. So in any case, so the same that is expressing through, you'll have the same grid, the electricity is going to the stadium, electricity going to the house with the nightlight, same electricity is there, expressing differently. So here I'll also say that, okay, through the universal, through the individual, it'll be the same thing expressing the whole universal. If you take the whole universal conscious being, then it's going to be expressing through universal, right? Whole universal existence through that, through me, same thing like this. That's why the difference is just in the upadhi, like this. Next mantra we'll get to next time, because if we start now, it's not worth starting to introduce in just 5-10 minutes. We'll discuss more about, but this is the thing, is the difference is the expression or where it's reflected, not in the thing in itself. This is the important thing. And then also the difference is going to be just by name, right? The name, I have a name, I give myself a name, I'm this, and I give the universal a name like that, right? Just a name. When you remove the name already, this is a very good thing. You try that. You don't label name things. When you're not labeled, then the differences are so much less like this. You go somewhere where it puts the name tag, somewhere to get together, where you meet people. Trying no name tag, just people are there. That's it. People. You talk to somebody, good talk, no problem. Going. You don't say what's your name, where are you from, this. Now you start building up the name and form, like that. So the thing is, look, when I withdraw from my identification with the upadhi, with the names I give to myself, that I'm this in this profession, this relation, mother, father, or I'm the child of this person, or whatever it is, I withdraw from them, how much more peace I am and how much less limited I am. And the deep sleep proves that to me, because then I withdraw from all of it, and it's so wonderful. Oh, how wonderful, because I've gone back to my nature of, without the upadhis, drop them, just the avidya is there, unfortunately, so I didn't notice it, but I can recollect how wonderful it is, and where's the limitation then? You sleep, and the most powerful person sleeps, the greatest criminal sleeps, and an animal sleeps. Where's the difference then in the sleep? Right? Can you see any difference? So the thing is, when these are removed, then. But the thing is, I identify with the medium, and then I say that's a very big one, or that's a universal one, so that's that name I give, and that upadhi there and here. like this. So this is learning not to see, to drop. We don't have to, how do you say, you don't stifle the upadhi, you drop it, you understand it. You understand, and then what difference does it make? Then what difference does it make if it expresses this way or that way? The same consciousness like this. So this is an important point here. And also, if we were to say, okay, there's Brahman, so you start looking for some Brahman, there's some big thing, this, you can never find. How are you going to find infinite? Where are you going to go to find it? It's all pervasive. Oh, good. So how am I going to find it? So it'll never work. And somebody will say, yes, you're Brahman. That's what it is. Okay, what do you mean by that? So the thing is, you have to start with you, right? Because my mistake is about myself. You know, we run after that, looking for what we're looking for, whether in the material things, physical thing, or whether in religious things, so much, but how am I going to find? So that's why it says, okay, start now with you, right? Start with you, look at yourself, and learn how to look at yourself without, you know, without being caught up in all the experiences, right? Pull back. I'm the one who's behind the seeing, behind the hearing, like this. Then you see yourself different. Then, yes. Then you can say, yes. It becomes clear that I'm not this limited one, okay? So that's why you start with tvam, right? The Mahavakya they have is tattvamasi, that thou art. But here is tvam, tvam tat, you are that. Start with you, because that's what you have. That you don't even know, right? That's always say that, because it's something we said not known and not unknown. We can't grasp it like this, okay? So, but you know you're there. So you go, you want to look at yourself and drop the limited ideas about it, and then what? Then that is the unlimited. You don't have to go look for it somewhere else, right? If it's unlimited, it's in you, and that's the obvious place where you can look, okay? So that's what this is. First, learn to withdraw, and then when you look into it, withdraw like this. It's not withdrawal by quieting the mind, by focus or this, but by looking through this lens that it's giving us, right? Looking through this understanding from this other point of view, if you want, right? Swami Shivananji many places says, have a new angle of vision. And I'm sure this is the angle of vision he's saying, because the angle of vision I have is through the ideas of myself. No angle of vision, drop those ideas, then what? Right? So we think, what'll happen? I'll drop all my ideas, then what'll happen? What difference? What do you mean what'll happen? You do it in sleep anyway, right? So drop them and see what you are then. But, you know, it takes a bit to do it because conditioning, right? But the thing is, we have to sincerely, somebody says, you have to sincerely look into it. There's no other way like this. So first you withdraw from the things like this, then what are you then, right? That only you can see for yourself. So that, and then of course, that's where you find, anywhere else you try to find your base or your contentment, happiness, it'll be limited because it'll be conditional. But you, what you are inside is not conditional. My seeing is conditional, my ideas are conditional, but I, the conscious being, not conditional. That's why last week we called it impersonal awareness, remember? From awareness we said impersonal awareness like this. So like this. So these are a few thoughts on this. And then we'll finish here for today and then continue next time. Om. 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 Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. So before we go, if there any pertinent question has come up, we can spend a few minutes to look into it.
Mm-hmm. My question that may or may not make sense, but I'll ask it.
Please.
So when, you know, from my understanding, when we die, you know, our subtle body is sort of released and it is re-embodied, and we come back with our vrittis from previous lifetimes. So the work that one does here, the undoing, right, the becoming impersonal from personal, that sort of carries through, I'm assuming, lifetime to lifetime as well.
Some of the things go, when you have a plant and the seed is there, right? The seed is planted, some of the things from the plant will come out there, right? Because it goes into the DNA of the seed, and this, and it evolves over time. So it'd be the same thing, you go into the seed form and like this. But that, again, is the individual, not to do with the consciousness. Actually, I was waiting for, just to point this up, because this Miguel had asked, so I hope he's going to listen to the recording also, because there was a good example given about, because he asked about reincarnation, this might also help with that, which is a very interesting way that I recently just heard, a very nice explanation of this, where, because he said, how does Atma have to do with reincarnation? Yours is about the samskara, his is about Atma, but this can help probably with both. It's like this, if you have the pot with water, and the pot is getting old, and you pour the water to the other pot, right, and the old pot then broke, and you throw it away. Like this, right? That's the example. So now what happens is, but the pot has the reflect, the water has the reflection of the sun as well. So when you pour the water to the new one, discard the old one, same water is going, the reflection is still there, right? So what happens is, of course, the pot is the physical body, right? The subtle body is the water, so that stays, that goes. So whatever tent was there, you know, whatever was there will still be there, whatever in the water. The reflection will be there, but what happened to the sun? Did the sun reflect in the water move from one pot to the other? No difference, didn't make a difference. So from the perspective of Atma, there's no difference, the sun, nothing happened. The reflection, so let's say that the pot has certain samskara, it's like the water is a bit murky, it'll go, same murkiness will be there like this, something similar, you know, we can assume. And then, but the reflection will be same, like this. Reflect, you know, the original is the same. So what happens in general, the seed of your personality will be there, like this. You don't have to wait for this is the example of the reincarnation, Atma in this. But if you think of it, you go to sleep, you go to deep sleep. You go into seed form. You come out same, right? How can you come out the same? You went in dormant form. So between lifetimes is like a long sleep. So yes, the body is changing over time now, so maybe there'll be an overhaul, more of a change to the body, but the base character is going to still be there, like this. So that's what is said, like this. Okay. Helps it with some samskara, like this. His base character will be there, it'll just go dormant and then come out. Like this, won't be surprises like this. But in any case, what we're looking to now negates that altogether, because you're talking about who you are behind this. So from this perspective, when you're looking from Atma's perspective, because one thing is about reincarnation in any model like this, it'll never be totally satisfactory, the explanation. Why? Because there's still some unknowns there, so we can't totally know. Do you know anything completely in this world? You work in some field. You're expert in it already. Do you know it completely? one little thing in your field completely to the bottom, you don't know. That's why the moment it's knowledge through senses, through mind, you can never know it completely. You can't. So even explanation of, okay, after death, reincarnation, this, we can never, there, of course, it has to do with paroksha, something I don't see. So somebody gives a good explanation so we can accept it, but we don't fully know it, right? So we'll never know it completely. You know, we can bring cases, show, look, this is why incarnation must be, blah, blah, you can find. And then how some of the character carries on, they went into seed form and then sprouted out similar to it was before, we can say all that, very good. But we can never fully know. Even I remember, if we remember previous lives, blah, blah, still it won't totally solve it. Never. But the thing is, the one thing you can fully know is Atma. You are, you know that. It's just that we know it incorrectly. That's something you've no question that you are, you exist, you're conscious, you've no question about that one. So that's something you can completely know. Anything else you can't completely know. So it's a very interesting thing. So that's why not these, you know, we have to take some of these things on Shraddha, because we can't have the full thing, but this one, we say that's the important thing to look into, because that, it'll negate all this fact anyway, the idea that you're that your limited ideas of yourself, it'll negate that. So what difference does it make how the incarnation happened or not? What difference does it make when in any way that is falsified? So that's when we get into Vedanta, we even, reincarnation we leave behind because we say you're not born, not died, so why do I even care about the pot and water, how it worked or not? Okay, so that's why it's an interesting thing, but don't worry about too much. Look into who you are behind this more than that part of it. That's the important thing, okay? Very good. Good. So have a wonderful week, and then we'll continue next time. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Dharma.